any witnesses? Give me 1 second. At this time, if there are any witnesses on the line, you can just say here.
Here.
Okay, I do have a witness at this time. I need all witnesses will be now sworn in by the city clerk together in unison. So all witnesses at this point, I understand, only have one.
You have Danielle Murray for the Lester Thompson for the city development department.
Okay, so all witnesses, Ms. James, would you conduct a swearing in?
Yes. Okay, all witnesses, if you would, raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that this testimony you're about to give at this hearing shall be truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Yes.
Ms. Murray?
Okay.
I do. You see me there?
All witnesses are now sworn in. At this time, we will hear from the appellant and counsel to and proceed. Go ahead, proceed with your case.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, everybody. My name is Troy Covington. I'm with Bloom Parham LLP in Atlanta. It's my pleasure and privilege to represent LGI Homes Georgia LLC, which I refer to as LGI. We're before you this evening for an administrative appeal under Fairburn Code of Ordinances, Section 65-27 and 65-239. We're here to talk about the Legend Creek subdivision, the development of single-family homes, which LGI is developing or trying to develop off of White Mill Road in Fairburn. Before we go any further, though, I need to preface the rest of my remarks by telling you that LGI's position is that it is pursuing this administrative appeal out of an abundance of caution only. As y'all probably know, LGI is already in litigation with the city regarding the city's review of the plans for Legend Creek. That case is called LGI Homes Georgia LLC versus Lester Thompson et al. Civil action number 2021-CV-357-417 in the Superior Court of Fulton County, or what I'll refer to as the pending action. We'll get more into the details of this a bit later, but LGI had to sue the city in what's called a mandamus action because LGI could not get the city to review some revised plans for Legend Creek. LGI even filed a prior administrative appeal, but the city didn't take any action on that appeal at all, despite LGI requesting that the city review the appeal and act on it on many occasions. LGI had no choice but to file a complaint, which it did in late November 2021, to start the pending action. The key point is that the court in the pending action on January 7, 2022, entered a consent order setting forth the process for review of LGI's plans and providing that the court shall have jurisdiction to decide any issues that arise regarding the decision on the plan review. So it is LGI's position that the pending action is the proper venue to decide these plan review questions, and that this administrative appeal, the one we're here to talk about this evening, is not a waiver by LGI of its arguments that the court should decide this controversy in the pending action. Okay. LGI submitted this administrative appeal out of an abundance of caution to avoid the waiver of LGI's right to any review of the decisions complained of in this administrative appeal. So please don't be offended. It's nothing personal. I just have to make clear on the record that LGI believes that Judge Paige Reese Whitaker should decide plan review questions in the pending action. Now, LGI just had to file the administrative appeal that led us here tonight to make sure that some review was exercised by someone, and LGI's position has not changed regarding who should be conducting the review. So why exactly are we here on this Monday evening with an appeal regarding plan review for Legend Creek? The reason in a nutshell is that LGI has the vested right to develop the Legend Creek property under the parameters of Land Disturbance Permit 17-006-LDP-R7, what I'll refer to as the LDP, that the city previously approved and officially issued in October 2020. LGI had to submit a revision to the approved plans in October 2021 to correct an issue with the location of the detention ponds on the property. The city then refused to review the revised plans or take any action, as I mentioned previously, until Judge Whitaker ordered them to do so in the consent order. The city's errors in that review of the revised Legend Creek plans are the subject of LGI's current administrative appeal, which was filed on February 25th, 2022. When it finally did review the revisions to the LDP, the city failed to recognize LGI's vested rights in the LDP. Instead, The city used the opportunity of the what should have been a minor revision to the LDP to correct the location of the detention ponds to attempt to require LGI to make wholesale changes to the LDP and to comply with different, more stringent development requirements than those required by the LDP. Specifically, the changes to the approved LDP that the city has indicated through plan review that it wants to require fall into a few buckets. First, increase stream buffers from 35 feet to 50 feet, plus an additional setback of 25 feet in which impervious cover would be prohibited. This is huge because the increased stream buffers would result in 15 lots becoming not buildable or requiring variances to place houses in the no impervious buffer. Second, more stringent detention pond design, including a flatter slope and a littoral shelf. Two of the project's detention ponds have already been constructed per the requirements of the LDP, but do not meet a number of the requirements the city is now trying to impose. To meet the additional requirements the city wants to impose, the ponds would have to be completely redesigned, and the two ponds that have already been constructed would have to be significantly enlarged, also resulting in the loss of lots from the project. Third, revision of the LDP's Phase 1 Erosion Control Plan to show more best management practices, or BMPs. The improved Phase 1 plan set out in the LDP has already been constructed, and the city approved the constructed components. Next, implementation of additional water quality measures to treat stormwater runoff from homes that bypass the detention ponds. The approach used in the LDP is a commonly accepted practice and meets the standards outlined in the Georgia Stormwater Management Manual. LGI appeals these decisions because LGI has vested rights to develop Legend Creek according to the standards and requirements the city previously approved in the LDP that was issued. The city preliminarily approved the Legend Creek plan in 2004 and consistently represented until 2021 that the project could be developed in accordance with the approved plans. LGI acquired the Legend Creek property in reliance upon being able to develop the project as allowed by the LDP and has expended significant sums of money in order to develop the project in reliance on the LDP as approved by the city. More specifically, LGI's expenses on development at Legend Creek totaled to $3,557,099.97 as of March 23rd, 2022. So let's talk about the facts establishing LGI's vested rights to develop this property. These facts establish LGI's vested rights to develop Legend Creek in accordance with the approved LDP. LGI relies on the facts set forth in its written appeal submissions, on the exhibits LGI submitted for the hearing, and on the testimony of Mr. Mitch Paul, who you'll hear from in just a few moments, and on the affidavit of Tony Porhasan of LGI, which was submitted earlier today. Remember, as I previously mentioned, the city communicated to LGI and its predecessors that owned the property that the property would be able to be developed under the terms of the approved LDP that LGI got issued. The city made these communications for years, and we're going to look at them now. So originally, the preliminary plat was submitted to the city on October 6, 2004. On November 3, 2004, the preliminary plat was approved by the city. And I'm going to share my screen if I can.
You're able to, sir.
So what you see here is the what is the approved LDP for Legend Creek that we've marked as Exhibit 1 for the hearing. And this is really tiny, tiny here. I'm going to try to zoom in. But if you see here that looks like the two columns right about here where my mouse is, preliminary plat approved November 3rd, 2004 with the following conditions. And it states the rezoning conditions do not mention stream buffer widths. The preliminary plat approval condition number 11 states that a separate sheet shall be included in the construction plans that accurately delineates required buffers, et cetera. All plan sheets in the approved construction plan show 35-foot buffers. I'm going to share a different exhibit here. Okay. On January 15, 2007, a settlement agreement and release was executed in the matter styled Jerry D. Smith versus City of Fairburn et al., civil action number 2004-CV-82884 in the Superior Court of Fulton County. And this is the settlement agreement that you're looking at right here. It's a multi-page document, so I'm not going to scroll all the way through it, but we've submitted this for your examination also.
For the record, Troy, and this may help speed things along, we don't have an objection to the introduction of any of the exhibits that you've proposed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Starkey. So I may not open up all the different exhibits. I'll just refer to them. If there's something important, I'll go to that exhibit and share screen. Otherwise, it'll slow us down a little bit in the presentation. On May 22nd, 2007, a consent judgment was entered by the court in the litigation and with a case I just referred to, ordering the parties, including the city, to abide by the terms of the settlement agreement and release. And you have that in Exhibit 3. On February 1st, 2008, James B. Williams, Fairburn City Administrator, wrote to Brian Petershagen, who owned the Legend Creek property at that time. In the letter, Mr. Williams stated that the LDP was issued to you based on the preliminary plat that was approved on or about December 15, 2007 as part of the settlement of the lawsuit. Consequently, we are going to honor that plat approval indefinitely. And sharing my screen now, it's been marked as Exhibit 5. On March 31st, 2017, Tarika Peaks, Fairburn City Planner / Zoning Administrator, wrote to Dennis Burke of Centerline Surveying and Land Planning, accepting the Legend Creek Site Plan Review Comment response. The buffers could be shown per original plat. So basically what you see here is at that time, the city had tried to impose a 50-foot stream buffer with an additional 25-foot impervious setback. But the city clearly and unmistakably agreed that this increased setback would not be required and that instead the buffer shown on the original plat would be allowed. Your response has been accepted. It just doesn't get much clearer than that. The buffer shown on the original plat were the 35-foot buffers approved in the LDP, and the 35-foot buffers were what were referred to in the settlement agreement that I just referred to. On April 23rd, 2019, Tarika Peaks, by then the Fairburn Director of Planning and Zoning, sent a letter to Centerline Surveying and Land Planning stating that all plan review comments had been satisfied for the LDP. And you can see that in Exhibit 6. The letter stated that the LDP would be issued at the pre-construction meeting for the project, which is what happened. The LDP issued with the 35-foot buffers that were originally approved by the city in 2004. On September 11th, 2020, former city attorney Randy Turner sent an email to Olivia Petershagen, again, one of the former owners of the subject property, stating that the Legend Creek property could be developed in accordance with the terms of a 2007 court-approved settlement, notwithstanding that one or more of the development standards had changed. And you can see that in our Exhibit 8. On September 15th, 2020, LGI closed on the Legend Creek property with the seller's proceeds and executed deeds held in escrow pending resolution of whether the LDP could be assigned to LGI or not. And you can see those documents in what we've marked as Exhibit 9. LGI paid $1,876,000 for phases 1 and 2 of the Legend Creek property, which totaled up to 71.93 acres. So that's about $26,080 per acre. Then on October 12, 2020, Randy Turner sent an email to Olivia Petershagen stating that after careful consideration, we have concluded that the development rights which accrued to you as a result of the 2007 settlement agreement and consent order are in fact divisible under Georgia law and may be transferred to your intended purchaser. Thus, your successor entitled to the property will be permitted to develop the site in accordance with the same rights created by and incorporated into the 2007 settlement and court order. And that's what we've marked as Exhibit 10. And if you don't have the exhibits handy and there's any of the exhibits that you want to see, just let me know and I'll be happy to pull that up and share screen on it. So that's crucially important because with the explicit assurance that LGI would be able to develop Legend Creek as approved from the city, having been given that, the seller's proceeds and the executed deeds being held in escrow were released and the sale of Legend Creek to LGI was completed. The city officially issued the LDP on October 15th, 2020, and LGI began developing the property based on the requirements contained in the LDP. On October 16th, 2020, the limited warranty deed and quitclaim deed from the Legend Creek seller to LGI were filed and reported, and the sale was complete. Now, let's be super clear. LGI would not have closed on Legend Creek without the assurance that LGI would be allowed to develop the Legend Creek property as the city had approved it. So the city approved the LDP and LGI relied on that approval. So what's the problem? The issue was that the approved LDP included what's called inline detention. Basically, detention is where you're controlling your runoff from the property so that you don't have dirt and sediment running off the property while it's being developed. Well, in the LDP, you had what's called inline detention. Basically, that detention was in the stream channels on the property. That used to not be a problem, but around 2008, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers changed its rules to no longer allow it. So in early October 2020, LGI's engineer Mitch Polk discussed with Lester Thompson on behalf of the city that the plans for the LDP had inline detention ponds and would need revisions. And you'll hear more from Mr. Polk about this in a moment. At the pre-construction meeting that was held on October 15th, 2020, Mr. Polk and Lester Thompson again explicitly discussed the in-stream detention and that a revision would be necessary. And Mr. Thompson gave no indication that a future revision would cause delays. On July 29th, 2021, Mr. Polk submitted revised plans to the city to remove the detention ponds from the perennial streams and replace them with a single detention pond to comply with the rules of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. On August 5th, 2021, he had to retract the submission of the revised plans due to problems with the sewer inspection under the revised plans. And then Mr. Thompson, for the first time, opined that a plan revision to correct the inline stream issue would be subject to all current rules, regulations, and standards of the city. This was on August 30th, 2021, 10 months after LGI had spent $1.876 million to buy Legend Creek based on the explicit assurance that the property could be developed according to the approved LDP that did not contain those standards. LGI, of course, disagreed with this interpretation, but had no choice but to proceed with the submission of new plans in an attempt to get the project moving again. And you'll hear from Mr. Polk about how he submitted new plans to address required changes on the site regarding removing the inline stormwater detention in October 2021. And then we get into the whole back and forth with the pending litigation that I talked about earlier, where nothing happens in the review of the plans for a few months until the consent order was issued in the pending action and the city went ahead and reviewed the plans. And that review is what we're here to talk about tonight. So on January 20th, 2022, the city returned plan review comments applying standards to the revised LDP not called for by the original approved LDP, including a requirement for 50-foot stream buffers plus an additional 25-foot no impervious buffer. And then there are some comments back and forth from Mr. Paulk to LGI to Mr. Thompson and the engineering staff. And Mr. Paulk pointed out regarding the stream buffers and other issues noted above that the city was attempting to hold LGI to more stringent requirements than the city had already approved in the LDP. And then finally, on February 4th, 2022, the city returned additional plan review comments refusing to change its position on the stream buffers or the other items for which the city was attempting to impose additional requirements beyond what it had already approved in the LDP issued in October 2020. You can see that in what we've marked as Exhibit 16. So this is all a problem because losing the 15 lots to the increased stream buffers would cost LGI money, specifically $71,154.73 per lot plus interest. Collectively, the cost to LGI of all the lost lots would be a principal amount of $1,067,320.95 on top of revenue from the lost sales. Further, the increased stream buffer would result in additional costs of approximately $200,000 for engineering and building a new retaining wall. And redesigning the detention ponds would result in the loss of another 3 to 4 lots, causing LGI to incur at least an additional $213,464.19 in damages plus interest. Now, I mentioned vested rights. The requirements for LGI having vested rights in the prior approved LDP are met here. First, there were multiple assurances by the city over the years that Legend Creek could be developed according to the requirements set out in the approved LDP. The city originally approved the terms of the LDP in November 2004 when the Legend Creek property was owned by LGI's predecessor in interest. The city affirmed that it would honor the terms of the LDP in 2008, 2017, and 2019. In October 2020, the city's attorney explicitly stated that the developmental rights acquired by LGI's predecessor in interest could be transferred to its intended purchaser, namely LGI. LGI relied on this representation to close on the Legend Creek property and begin development of the property. LGI spent $1.876 million to buy the property and then since has invested millions more into developing it. And I put up, this is, again, a spreadsheet that's very hard to read, but just so you have a sense of what we're looking at here, this is the job cost report for LGI. It was in our Exhibit 17 and referenced an affidavit in Mr. Porhassan's affidavit at paragraph 13. LGI has incurred an additional $1,681,099.97 in costs to develop Legend Creek, for a total of $3,557,099.97 in expenditures through March 23rd, 2022, spent in reliance on the city's express approvals. So when you add up the repeated assurances of the city plus the substantial expenditures by LGI, this gives LGI vested rights in the terms of the LDP that was issued by the city in October 2020. As the city acknowledged, the rights and the terms of the LDP could and did transfer from LGI's predecessor in interest to LGI when LGI closed on the Legend Creek property in 2020. OCGA section 44-5-40, which is a state statute, provides vested interest in property stemming from the approval of land disturbance, building, construction, or other development plans, permits, or entitlements in accordance with a schedule or time frame approved or adopted by the local government shall be descendable, divisible, and alienable in the same manner as estates in possession. Again, you can't be any more explicit than Randy Turner's October 12, 2020 email. And without this assurance, LGI would not have closed on the Legend Creek property. The vested rights of LGI's predecessor in the LDP transferred to LGI when it purchased the subject property. So at this point, I'm going to shift gears and call my witness, Mr. Mitch Paulk, unless any of you have any questions for me at this point.
Does any member of council have any questions at this point?
I'm going to, if I could be heard, Mayor, Council, may please the Mayor and Council, opposing Council, I represent Development Director Lester Thompson in this matter, and I need to be heard in my opening remarks before we get into to evidence. It's now he made his opening remarks. It's my opportunity to make my opening remarks before we get into any evidence.
Okay.
No objection.
Okay, no objection. Okay, go ahead, Mr.
May I proceed? I want to first thank you for your patience and your indulgence here today, and we appreciate you showing up to hear this matter. I want to also indicate that what I say and what Troy Covington say is not evidence. We present sort of an outline of where the evidence should take us, should we consider any evidence. And we talk about due process. There's no doubt that the prior administration did not provide a hearing, but that's why we're here today. An appeal was filed on February the 25th, outlining various allegations, and out of an abundance of caution, we have provided both appellate avenues. But I want you to understand that there's an appeal to the side of the city administrator, and there's an appeal to the side of the mayor and council. In developmental rights, I will concede they were transferred. Nonetheless, developmental rights are to be resolved by the city administrator, and that hearing is scheduled for April the 13th. So that's not within your purview here today. And I'm going to start with, if I can share my screen now, I'm going to start with the appeal letter provided by LGI. Are you able to see it now?
Yes.
Okay, and we'll start here. They appealed pursuant to Section 6527, 6239, and 77194, and any other applicable provisions. Out of an abundance of caution, LGI hereby submits the following appeals. And then they go in the language of their appeal. I'm just kind of walk you through why the majority of what they argue has to be decided by the city administrator and not mayor and council here this evening. Development plans. And then I'm going to, after I walk through this, pull up the statute, the Fairburn City Ordinance, and walk you through it as well. But City Ordinance at Section 71.1, 71.2C talks about development plans. And what they want you to do is make a decision that you don't have the authority to make, and to deal with the question of the site plan and whether or not it's grandfathered in and whether or not they have vested rights. That's not your decision. That's the decision of the city administrator. Go down as we talk about detention ponds. Under the Fairburn Code of Ordinance at Section 71.10.21, we lay out detention ponds. It speaks to detention ponds. And any issues dealing with detention ponds are appealed to the city administrator per Section 71.182 of the city ordinance. Sidewalks, codified at 71.46, and like detention ponds, any issues with detention ponds are appealable to the city administrator. That appeal is going to happen on April the 13th or the 14th. Don't quote me on the exact date. Erosion and sediment control, 71.1056, also appealable to the city administrator. Water quality, water runoff, all Chapter 71. Also appealable to the city administrator. Development rights, 71 and 77. If you go through their document, and you all have a copy of this, it was submitted on February 25th. It's with the package. And no matter how nuanced, no matter how detailed, no matter what he's saying, if you go through it piece by piece, we're talking about developmental rights. And so now I take you to the appropriate code sections, and we'll walk through Bear with me. If I can. I'm going to walk through the appropriate code sections here. Normally, I have somebody doing this for me. Now this thing wants to. Why are you doing this? There we go. We're going to start with 71 71:1 here. Bear with me. I'm almost there. All right, 71:1, intention and application. Let's go up a little bit more. Land development, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the development of land, site plans. It says, it is the intent of this chapter that it will apply to and provide guidance for the development of lands within the incorporated limits of the city, whether the developments involve the subdivision of land or the construction of buildings and or other improvements on a single parcel. Any land development activity must first comply with this chapter. This chapter is considered to be complementary to the zoning, subdivision, environmental provisions of this code. The city administrator, not mayor and council, respectfully, the city administrator shall provide the final authoritative interpretation of any apparent conflicts that may be presented. Now I'm going to take you to the appellate provision. Before I do that, I'm sorry, let's go to some definitions at section 71.2C. Development plans, and that's what we're talking about. That's what they've submitted. That's the stuff that's in evidence today. Development plan means the detailed and professional plan showing the layout and design, site work, and construction activities proposed for a project other than architectural engineering building plans, including but not limited to site plans, grading plans, erosion and sedimentation, pollution control plans, tree protection plans, landscape plans, street plans, and profiles, water supply plans, sanitary and storm sewer plans and profiles, storm water management plans, other site improvement plans, and or appropriate sections, detailed notes, schedules, lections, legends, and diagrams. Now, notwithstanding the fact that appellant did not cite this code section, it's relevant in making certain that we follow the process, we have to deal with it. Now, let's go to section 7182. That outlines the appellant's appeal rights as it relates to whether or not this site plan in the development rights that were passed on from the predecessor owner and developer, whether they should allow the present developer to submit plans that do not comport with the present day city ordinance. It may be that the city manager agrees with LGI, but that's neither here nor there today, because the point here is that it's beyond your authority to decide. So let's go to 71.182. So we can be clear, because we want to provide due process and we want to get it right. Basis for appeals, still in 71, appeals to the city administrator may be taken by any person aggrieved in accordance with section 77-194. Now, he appropriately cited 77-194. If we go to 77-194, let's go there for a second. He cited 77-194 in his appeal. And what we can't do is add meaning to clear words. We have to take the statute as it's written, and we have to apply it and live by it, whatever we think about it. 77-194 reads, appeals. A decision of the director of the community development, concerning the administration, interpretation, or enforcement of these regulations may be appealed to the city administrator within 10 calendar days of that decision. Appeals may be made by an affected owner, developer, or by any legal resident of the city who feels he has been adversely affected by that decision. All appeals shall be submitted in a form prescribed by the city and shall include a fee established by the city. The city administrator shall render decision on an appeal within 30 calendar days after the appeal is accepted for review by the city administrator. It is my position that 100% of what he's asking you to hear has to be decided by the city administrator. And even though he submitted or LGI submitted their request outside of 10 days, because we wanted to be certain that they would provide a due process, we provided them a hearing anyway. I think their appeal came 15 business days after the development director's decision. So technically, they were out of time. And so, again, we wanted to make certain we did it right. We wanted to make certain we complied with our ordinances, and we afforded a hearing, notwithstanding their failure to file timely. And part of that was because the previous time in which they filed an appeal, there was never one granted. And also, I want the record to reflect that I don't agree that he continues to move forward on his litigation across the street. But I will address that with that court, with that judge. That's also outside of your purview. I will address that with that court. And we can just walk through his document, and it's all stuff that the city administrator has to resolve. The only thing that may be resolvable by this body would be the 35-foot buffer stuff. But the only way you can resolve that is to decide the question, because the city administrator gets to decide if the plans as submitted have to comport with the new ordinance, with the provisions of the present ordinance, or if they can keep the 35-foot buffers. The only thing that you may be able to decide here today is whether or not the 35-foot buffer complies with Section 6520-233A12, and although counsel's opening remarks are not evidence, he's pretty much stipulated that they don't comport with that. That's their whole position, that they want to build something. They want to do a 35-foot buffer when our code requires a 50-foot buffer. And if Lester Thompson does anything other than what he's done, he acts ultra vires without authority. He just doesn't have that authority. And so I submit that the issues that are embodied in their appeal all have to be resolved by the city administrator. So let's be clear. They're not left without recourse. They're not left without due process. The city administrator has already scheduled a hearing to resolve these issues. And notwithstanding that, they come here today and boldly state that, well, we're still going to continue. We're not wasting your time. We're just trying to make certain but we're still going to continue across the street, even though we're giving them an appeal, even though the city is granting an appeal. Now, just to be clear, to show you that the process doesn't end once the city administrator makes his decision, and neither will it end when you've made whatever decision you make here today, they still can file an appeal. Whatever you decide here today, whatever the city administrator decide when he hears the case on April the 13th, any person aggrieved by a decision on appeal by the city administrator shall have the right of appeal by writ of certiorari to the superior court. So they're getting a lot of opportunities to have due process and to be heard. And so I submit that what you have to do here today is punt this decision to the city administrator.
Is that it? You finished, Mr. Story?
I am. That completes my opening and my remarks and my argument.
Okay. And for members of council, if you have any procedural questions, your questions needs to be directed to Attorney Noel. And with that in mind, Ms. Noel, I just like to make sure for clarification purposes, if I'm understood it right, I want to make sure the council is briefed correctly. The city council, whatever decision is made by council, it is not. They have 7 business days from today for that decision to be made. Is that accurate?
That's correct, Mayor Abram.
Okay. So members of council, in light of what you've just been briefed by the city attorney, the decision that you have to make today does not have to be made literally today, but you have 7 business days upon conclusion of this hearing. And so with that being said, I'd like to go ahead and ask the appellant to go ahead and present your case.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And if I could just take a minute before I get into my witness to respond to Mr. Starkey's remarks regarding this sort of jurisdictional issue.
Go ahead, sir. You've got the floor.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I would say that this is the first time hearing of any of this. We did file an appeal under several different sections of the code, thinking that there was some overlap between the sections, and a hearing was scheduled before this body and also a couple of weeks down the road with the city administrator. But this is the first I'm hearing any argument from council that the city council doesn't have jurisdiction over any part of this appeal tonight. I would cite specifically to Code of Ordinances section 65-239, which deals with the stream buffer issue. And that section provides that any person aggrieved by a decision or order of the city may appeal in writing within 15 working days after the issuance of such decision or order to the city clerk and shall be entitled to a hearing before the city council within 30 days of receipt of the written appeal. And so, that's basically the timeline that we traveled under for this portion of the appeal. The last plan review comment from the city was entered on February 4th. We filed an appeal to this body on within the 15 working days allotted. And then this hearing was scheduled within 30 days, exactly as is set out in 65-239A. So that's what we're talking about tonight. And I would argue that the buffer requirement is clearly before the council based on Article 5, stream buffer protection, that section, and then dealing with the administrative appeal right provided in 65-239A. And so, that's a large part of what LGI's appeal is based on, this issue of the stream buffers and what sort of buffer is going to apply to the Legend Creek development. And, looking at council was referring to code section 77-194, which we were trying to travel down under the previous appeal filed last year that was never heard by anyone. And we learned when we did that at least, I don't know if it's changed in the last, a month or so, but when we filed the prior appeal under 77194, it references a form that you have to use. Well, the form didn't exist, and it references a fee that had to be paid to have your appeal under that section, and no one knew what the fee was. So that's that code section, basically no one knew how to apply it or to get us a hearing under it at all, ever, which is what led to us filing the lawsuit back in November that's still currently pending in Fulton County Superior Court that I referenced. So that code section, we tried that one before, it didn't work. And so we're here properly, I think, under 65-239A, as to the stream buffers at least, and then also under 65-27 as to a number of the other rights that are on their issue here. If you look at 65-27A, administrative remedies dealing with LDPs provides that a person submitting the plan or holding the permit has a right to a hearing before the Fairburn City Council within 30 days after receipt by the local issuing authority of a written notice of appeal. And again, the appeal was submitted on February 25th, and we're here less than 30 days later. So that's exactly what's set out in 6527A. So I would submit that this hearing is proper under both of those sections. To the extent that the council has any further questions or wants that issue addressed further, I'd be happy to do that in writing prior to making the decision. But at this point, I'm going to proceed with presentation of my witness, unless there's anything else that you want to hear on that issue.
No, sir, you can proceed.
Mayor,
okay,
this is Councilwoman Davis. I need some clarification, and I don't know if that needs to, I need to address you or Attorney Noel on
Attorney
this.
Attorney Noel.
Okay, Attorney Noel. This is Councilwoman Davis. My clarification is that, if I remember correctly, I think we as council members appointed people to be on a stream buffer board or committee that would hear hearings or complaints in reference to stream buffers. And if there's another council person that can either validate that or say that doesn't exist, Councilwoman Portis Jones, can you chime in on this?
Ms. Jones,
yes. Yeah, may I?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Councilwoman Davis, you are correct. We do have a Board of Appeals to deal with streaming and buffering issues. What I am not sure of is if this specific type of appeal is under their purview. That I do not know.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead. You finished, Ms. Davis?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Council Portis Jones.
Okay. Go ahead, Attorney Covenant.
Thank you. So I'm going to call Mitch Paulk, and Mr. Paulk is in the same room with me. So we're going to try to do this in a fashion where we don't create a lot of reverb and echoing and things like that. So I'm going to leave my microphone as the active one and ask Mr. Paulk questions. But if any of you can't hear him or need something different to be set up, just please speak up and let us know. Okay. Mr. Paulk, if you could tell the council who you are and what you do.
My name is Mitchell Paulk. I am a professional engineer licensed in and I'm the owner of Land Engineering Incorporated, located in McDonough, and I primarily do site development engineering work.
Everyone hear that okay?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
Thank you. In your role as an engineer, do you work for LGI Homes Georgia, LLC?
Yes.
Have you done work for LGI at the Legend Creek subdivision in Fairburn?
Yes.
What is your role for LGI with respect to that neighborhood?
I am their consulting engineer who is guiding them through the development process with their current set of plans.
When did you start working on Legend Creek for LGI?
It was around September of 2020.
Do you know when LGI closed on the Legend Creek property?
It closed it October. I got those dates written down there. It closed on September 15th, 2020.
And then was that the final closing, or was there something that happened a month later also?
Yeah, they closed on in September. We actually started working with LGI about a month prior to that. They had engaged us to do an ALPA survey, which was required as part of the closing. We conducted the survey of the property. And then when they closed in September, mid-September, we were then engaged to further assist them with reviewing the plan set that had been prepared by Centerline Surveying. And we were going through the process of getting those plans approved by the city of Fairburn.
Before LGI closed on the property, had the city reviewed and approved plans for development of Legend Creek?
Yes.
Did you review those plans after LGI closed on the property?
Yes.
Did you see any issues with those plans?
Yes. There's four detention ponds shown on those plans, and two of those detention ponds are located within perennial streams that has buffers.
And can you explain a little bit more about what you mean by perennial streams and buffers?
Yeah, so prior to around 2007 timeframe, it was common practice for developers, engineers to design detention ponds within perennial stream areas. Most of those, you would see typically a concrete wall constructed across a stream with a weir or orifice type flow restrictor that would impound water within the stream. And around the 2007 timeframe, the Army Corps of Engineers stopped allowing the impoundment of water within perennial streams.
And so is it accurate to say that the LDP that approved had this kind of inline detention in its approved plans?
That is correct. It does have inline detention in the approved plans.
Now, did you raise the issue of the inline detention ponds with the city of Fairburn?
Yeah, I did make a comment about the plans because they were getting approved about the same time that I was getting involved with the plan with the plan review and made a comment to the city. Hey, we have some issues on these plans. We're going to have to get worked out and the response I got is we were aware of that and then started looking at ways to remedy the inline detention.
And who did you talk to at the city when you raised the issue of the inline detention?
That was Mr. Thompson.
When did you talk to Mr. Thompson about that issue?
It was at the pre-construction meeting.
When did that occur?
That meeting was mid-October, early to mid-October.
2020?
Yes, that's correct.
What did you tell Mr. Thompson at that meeting about the inline detention?
Well, there wasn't a detailed discussion, but we met on the site. We walked the site together along with myself, Mr. Thompson, and the grading contractor and an LGI representative. And we took a few moments to look over the plans. We talked about erosion control measures, among some other things. But that's when I talked to Mitch on the issue with the inline detention.
And how did Mr. Thompson react to that?
He didn't provide any guidance other than revision would be required.
Now, has the city of Fairburn issued an LDP for the Legend Creek property?
Yes.
And as we mentioned, the LDP included inline detention ponds, correct?
Yes.
Was the LDP issued after your conversation with Mr. Thompson identifying the inline detention ponds as an issue?
Yes. Well, I believe that's correct. It was about around the same time we had the pre-construction meeting.
What was your understanding of how revisions to the plans would be handled with respect to the inline detention ponds?
So we evaluated the detention, done some hydrology calculations. We determined that to remove the inline detention, we would have to construct an additional detention pond on the north end of the property. And that was going to require the three of the residential lots to be removed. And we would put in a wall detention system. And with that, alternate design, we could accommodate the, or we could remedy the inline detention by creating the third detention pond.
Now, you mentioned the pre-construction meeting for Legend Creek, correct?
Yes.
Did Mr. Thompson circulate an agenda for the pre-construction meeting beforehand?
Yes.
I'm going to share my screen here. If you could take a look at what we've marked as Exhibit 11 for this hearing, is that the pre-construction agenda for the pre-construction meeting for Legend Creek?
It is.
If I could direct your attention to point number 10 on page 2, what does the agenda state about changes in the work required on the project?
Number 10 states major changes in the work required shall be submitted to the city as a plan revision. Additional plan review fees may apply.
Did you understand changes in work to include changes in work due to the inline detention issue?
Yeah, I understood that there would be a plan revision required.
Did Mr. Thompson give any indication at the pre-construction meeting that the change to take out the in-stream detention would cause a delay in the project?
No.
Now, had the city approved the Legend Creek development prior to October 15th, 2020?
I don't know to what degree it was approved. I'm not aware of any previously issued land disturbance permits. I am aware of various reviews and through, because it goes all the way back to 2004.
Sorry, I'm just pulling up another exhibit here. Now, this is what we've marked as exhibit one. What is that document, sir?
That's the cover sheet on the approved LDP plan.
And what does this note tell us about the buffers that were approved in November 2004? If you look at the preliminary plat approval in November 3rd, 2004 and the following conditions that I referenced earlier.
I think you referenced number 11. Says a separate sheet needs to be included in this set of construction plans, which accurately delineates all the watershed protection areas, require buffers, flood plans, et cetera.
And what are the buffers that are shown in these plans?
35 feet.
I'm sorry, what was his answer?
35 feet.
Thank you.
All right, if you can take a look at what we've marked as Exhibit 5 for this hearing and tell us what this document is, please.
So that document is from the city, Mr. Rico Peaks, and that is the comments on our construction plans.
And what's the date on this document?
March 31st, 2017.
And who is Centerline Surveying and Land Planning, Inc.?
I'm sorry, let me back up. That's the comments on the Centerline Surveying plan submitted back in 2017. Centerline Surveying is an engineering and land surveying company who designed the Legend Creek subdivision. They prepared the construction plans that were approved.
What did the city tell Centerline in the set of site plan review comments regarding the stream buffers?
Looks like they then said they would have to be an additional setback 25 feet measured horizontally beyond the undisturbed natural buffer. And it appears to me that the city told Centerline they would have to adhere to the increased stream buffers back then. For whatever reason, they pulled away from that stance and allowed the 35-foot buffers.
So is it fair to say in this document that the city had again affirmed that 35-foot buffers shown in the original approved plat from 2004 were approved?
Yes, that's what I'm seeing.
And I'm showing you now what is marked as Exhibit 6. What is this document?
So that's the plan review approval of the construction plans in April 2019.
What was Tarika Peak saying on behalf of the city here?
She's basically saying that the city is okay with the construction plans as they were prepared in 2019, which showed 35-foot stream buffers.
And does this letter say when the LDP would be officially issued?
It would be issued at least pre-submit plans at least 3 days prior to scheduled date of the pre-construction meeting. And generally at the pre-construction meeting, the developer could pick up the land disturbance permit plan.
And is that what happened in this case when you had the pre-construction meeting?
Yes, it is.
And when the city issued the approved LDP at the pre-construction meeting in October 2020, what buffers were contained in that plan?
35 feet.
Now, did you have occasion on which you had to submit revised plans to the city after this?
Yes. So the plans that were approved at the pre-construction meeting back in the 2019 and then pre-construction meeting in October 2020, we discovered that the city had approved plans showing in-stream detention, which is not allowed by EPD. We then proceeded to revise the plans. And by the way, centerline surveying is not is no longer practicing engineering. So we actually attempted to go to centerline surveying to get them to do the plan revision, and they were not available to do that. So we had no choice but to bring land engineering into the scenario to do the plan revision. We attempted to do much less re-engineering of the plan to just simply show a plan with removing the two detention ponds from inline detention and designing a new detention pond on the three lots on the north end of the project.
And when did you initially submit this revised plan?
I don't have any exact date. You may have Troy, but I think it's around, it's been about 4 months ago now. So we're looking at sometime, maybe December.
Well, I'm looking back at around July 29th, 2021, when you first submitted revised plans. Does that sound right?
That could be right.
And did the city review those plans at that time?
I'm going to object to leading the witness. I've tried to give counsel latitude, but you have him on direct examination. And you cannot walk him through his testimony, and you cannot testify for him. Please ask a question.
I wasn't aware that we were in court and that we were operating under the rules of evidence or civil procedure here.
That's my objection, counsel. We still want this process to have some semblance of order and decorum.
I'm just trying to move us through as efficiently as we can.
Thank you. All right, I got my notes. In October 8th, 2021, we submitted the revised bill plans. Does that answer your question?
Well, I'm looking back. You had submitted plans prior to that initially, or a little earlier on in the project. And what was that date?
So that was in early August of 2021. I'm sorry, July 20th, 2021.
Did the city review those plans at that time?
No, now I remember. I'm sorry. So we submitted those plans in 2021. And the, like I said earlier, we attempted to scale back the amount of information shown in these plans because we didn't want to have to totally redesign the whole subdivision. So the plan submitted in 2021 had a few minor changes done to the sewer line because when we removed the L-line detention, the L-line detention had small pipes crossing the roadway downstream of the detention, 18-inch pipes. When we took out the L-line detention, then the water's not being held back in the stream. We had to put in a much larger pipe. Furthermore, the Corps of Engineers requires that your pipes be buried up to 30%. So that 18-inch pipe became a 48-inch pipe. And there was proposed sewer lines crossing that old 18-inch pipe, now becoming a 48-inch pipe, required those sewer lines be raised up a couple of feet. So there was, and those sewer lines were shown in our revised plans, but we had not gotten approval from the city to construct the revised sewer line. And the only revision of the sewer line was raising it up. That, in my opinion, is a minor change. We routinely get obstacles on construction sites, rock, unsuitable materials, other things that require we alter elevations on sewer lines, a few inches, a couple feet here and there. Every time we make a change on those kinds of minor adjustments, we don't re-permit drawings. So we proceeded with making those minor adjustments, and the site inspector saw that we had changed the sewer line slightly, and then he shut the job down until we could no longer construct the sewer line. The plans were in the city's hands for review, and we somewhat panicked at that time because this was a surprise to us, so we retracted that plan submittal to kind of regroup and figure out how we're going to proceed with if there was ways we could continue constructing the sewer line with the old set of plans, and turns out we were not able to. But bottom line is we retracted that July submittal.
Did you ask Mr. Thompson if he would administratively approve a change to the sewer and stormwater plans so the development could keep moving?
I did.
And what was his response to that?
No.
So what did LGI have to do with the development at that point?
We had to stop working.
What did LGI have to do to pause the development?
Well, the first thing they had to do is get the site stabilized from an erosion control perspective. Yeah, grassy, seeding, straw. The site's substantial in size, so there was some work to be done in that regard. Plus, all the detention ponds had to get constructed for the approved plans, which they were. The two ponds that are not in the streams were actually finished up, matted, grass, straw, and finalized, so that we could essentially stop working. And now those ponds were built per the approved plans.
And then once that was done, did you later submit another revised set of plans?
Yes, so after we regrouped and we shut the job down for some time, we then went and re-engineered the whole thing. Well, we did re-engineer. We copied a lot of the centerline surveying plans. So, for example, we didn't change any lot line configurations. We didn't change any geometry as far as roadway alignments, roadway lengths, roadway elevations. We didn't change the density of the lots on units per acre. In other words, going back to the approved zoning plan, we complied with that zoning plan with the revisions that we did. But what we did have to do is, since the city was not allowing us to submit drawings with centerlines tunnel block on them, even though we didn't make any changes to those drawings, we had to redraw what was on there on our tunnel block so the city would accept the plan to submit them. So there was a lot of drafting and just recreating the plan set on our end before we could get that plan set ready to submit to the city.
And what happened when you submitted this new plan set to the city in October of 2021?
So the city went through their normal review process, and they reviewed this plan as though it's a new development submittal, having to comply with all the current rules and regulations set forth, and they commented quite heavily on our plan set.
I'm going to pull up a different exhibit here. Bear with me one moment. I'm showing you what's been marked as exhibit 14 to this hearing. Can you identify this document?
So those are the city's response, the city's written comments through our plan submittal.
And when you say plan submittal, can you be a little more specific about what plan you're referring to?
Yeah, that was the second plan submittal. And I'm sorry, I don't have those exact dates. That was October 21, I believe.
Now, what did, in exhibit 14, these comments you got back from the city, what did these comments say about stream buffers?
They just simply said that we have to increase the 35-foot buffers to comply with the 50-foot undisturbed and additional 25-foot no impervious buffers.
And can you explain, when you talk about a 50-foot buffer plus an additional 25-foot no impervious, what exactly does that mean?
So as measured from the rest of the vegetation, or essentially the creek bank, you can't disturb the ground within 50 feet of that creek bank. And then beyond that, you can disturb the land. So 50 feet begins the no impervious buffer. So at the point from 50 feet to 75 feet from the stream bank, it can be disturbed, but there can't be any impervious cover constructed, such as roadways, rooftops, or even house deck. So no portion of the house can extend within that 75-foot no impervious buffer.
And when you say impervious, what exactly does that mean?
It's a hard surface, such as a paved surface or a rooftop. That means no water is going into the ground underneath the footprint of that impervious surface.
Now, what would the effect of this increased buffer be on the project?
So we redrew the buffers on our plan to follow the 50-foot buffer plus the additional no impervious setback. And it essentially encroached in some of the house footprints, making those lots unbuiltable.
I'm going to pull up another exhibit here. I'm showing you what I've marked as Exhibit 18 for this hearing. Are you familiar with this document?
Yes.
Can you describe what this document shows?
Yes, this shows the grading plan for the approved subdivision, grading as it was approved. And we marked in red and highlighted, I think in green, the additional 50-foot buffer and the no impervious buffer. I'm looking at that. So the blue lines that's closer to the streams, those are the 35-foot setback lines. The red line is the 50-foot setback. And then if you look, were to zoom in closer, you can see the no impervious highlighted in green. And then we marked in X's those lots that are non-buildable because of the encroached buffer.
And how many lots would become unbuildable because of the increased buffers?
I think 15.
Now I'm scrolling down a little bit. There's also a lot down at the bottom of the page that is labeled questionable, but will probably lose. Would you explain to us what's going on with that lot?
Yeah, so that the no impervious setback encroaches into the buildable area of that lot. I wrote questionable on the drawing. It could be that a real small house could fit on that lot, but the normal size house that LGI is building would probably not fit, at least most of their footprints.
Now, are there other parts of the approved LDP that the city attempted to change the requirements for?
Yeah, the detention ponds is one of those items. And so the two detention ponds that are not in the street that we went ahead and constructed per the approved plans, those ponds were actually inspected by the city, and we got okay that they looked good. We went and proceeded with finalizing those ponds with grassing, matting, straw, the necessary requirements to get the ground stabilized so that the vegetation can grow. Those ponds were constructed as approved by the city, and now when we get the review comments back, the review comments are requiring that we essentially modify those ponds to increase the slopes, add additional a bench in there, a littoral shelf, if you will, that is recommended sometimes in some jurisdictions. And so to do that, to address those comments, we got to basically go in there with machinery, undo what was already done. And in fact, we're going to redesign the ponds, but they're going to get substantially larger from a footprint size. They'll have to be reconstructed.
So how many lots potentially would be affected if you have to go ahead and do this complete redesign on those ponds you just described?
So you can see on the diagram here, the drawing on the screen, about the center of the screen, that's one of the two ponds. That particular pond is up against a 60-foot zoning setback on the right. It's not only up against the buffer on the left, but it's going to have to squeeze tighter because of the increase buffer, plus with the increase, the requirement to do the littoral shelf and some other things to the pond, it's going to have to get substantially larger, which means it'll eat up all of the three lots north of it. Those lots will have to be taken out to fit this pond.
And are those the lots that are circled in red there in the middle of the screen?
That is correct, yes.
Are there any other parts of that approved LDP that the city wanted to change the requirements for in their plan review?
There was, so the plan review is using a different approach to water quality treatment than what the city had approved on the first submittal, and which is a somewhat expensive fix for us. And to be honest, we haven't redesigned the site to accommodate the approach that we're told we're going to have to adhere to. And that's going to require some water quality treatment on each individual lot. I would say it's going to add somewhere around, I would guesstimate about $5,000 to $8,000 per lot, or maybe 25 of the lots that'll have to be provided for on the plan if we were to revise it to meet every comment the city's made on the plan.
And did the city want to change anything about the phase one erosion control plan?
Oh, yeah. So the phase one erosion control plan is already in. It's been constructed for the approved plan. It's in place. The DMPs are there. And they've been inspected by myself, and they've been inspected by the city. We both have concurred that they are adequate and in compliance with the approved plan. Now, on the plan revision, we're told that we got to redo the phase one erosion control plan, which has already occurred.
Now, we looked at the city's January 20th, 2022 plan review comments a moment ago. Did you respond to those plan review comments in any way?
We did.
And I've put up on the screen here what has been marked as Exhibit 15 for this hearing. Do you recognize that document?
Yes.
And what is this?
So this is we basically retyped the city comments are shown in black. So those are verbatim the city comments. And then the red lettering is our response to each of those comments.
What did you tell the city in regard to the items for which the city had laid out additional requirements, such as the stream buffers and the pond design?
So, for example, the city comment said that we need to provide the additional stream buffer, and my response was the city has already approved a 35-foot stream buffer on this very plan, and we just didn't revise it. And that's kind of where this whole thing came to a head where we were told that we could do something at one point in this game, and then later on we're told we can't.
What did you tell the city about the detention pond requirements?
It's sort of the same line of thought, that the city had already approved the detention pond that we've already constructed, and now they're telling me we've got to revise that same pond to be designed to different requirements than what was already approved.
What did you tell the city about the changes that wanted to be made to the BMPs?
I think we complied with any changes to the BMPs, with exception of the phase one erosion plan. We responded on the phase one erosion plan that plan has already been constructed, and the phase one of this project has already passed. We have already proceeded into phase two. Based on the grading activities that have already occurred. And the phase two and the phase three erosion plan, we complied and addressed all the comments that were given to us. We didn't contest any of those comments.
And did the city respond back to this document here that we're looking at?
Yeah, so we resubmitted this document with our revised plans, and the city commented a second time on the second submittal plans.
And I'm showing you what we've marked as Exhibit 16 for this hearing. Do you recognize that document?
Yes.
And what is this document?
So this is the second round of comments from the city.
Did the city respond to your position that it was changing requirements that it had already previously approved?
I don't think there's anything specific other than they continue to comment on the items that they comment on before. So there's never a discussion other than the city's taking the stance that we will comply with the current development standards, even though they'd already been, for example, even though the 35-foot buffer had already been approved on the very plan.
All right, subject to recall, that's all the questions that I have for Mr. Falk at this time.
If it may okay, please.
At this time, I go, Mr. Rory Stark, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a few questions, if I could, Mr. Falk. You've all but admitted that varying changes were made from the original 2004 plans that you've testified are vested over from the predecessor owner. Is that correct? I'm sorry?
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Starkey. Can you repeat the question?
I said you admitted that varying changes have been made.
Yes, I think you should hear.
Since the 2004. Am I muffled? Can you hear me?
Okay, I'm muted. Hold my speech.
Yes. Mr. Rory Stark, you're good. Is Mr. Falk. You're
okay, can you hear us now?
Mr. Stark, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you well.
Sorry, we were just having some technical difficulty on our end. If you could go back to that question.
Okay, you've admitted that varying changes have been made from the initial 2004 plans, correct?
No, sir, I have not considered various changes to the plan. There was an issue, there's two detention ponds in the stream. Our only change is to get those two ponds out of the stream.
Okay, let's do it like this. In 2004, there were approved plans, correct?
I know that the preliminary plat was approved around that time frame. That's correct.
Okay. And were you the engineer on the 2019 plans?
No.
Okay, who was the engineer on the 2019 plans?
Centerline Surveying.
I'm sorry?
Centerline.
Okay, and is it your testimony under oath, under the penalty of perjury, that the plans that you submit now are the very same as the plan submitted in 2019?
No, they removed the detention from the two detention ponds are being removed from the streams.
Okay. And you talked about sewer lines. What was the change to the sewer lines?
So where those outfall pipes from the in-stream detention changed, we had to increase them because of Army Corps of Engineer requirements.
Understood. So you changed sewer lines. I didn't ask why. I'm just asking, what did you change? You changed sewer lines and you changed detention ponds, correct?
That's correct.
What else have you changed?
That concludes. I mean, that's all we changed, unless there's other incidental changes this because of the city comments. But our intent is to change just the detention ponds. And incidentally, the sewer lines had some minor adjustments.
Understood. But the plans that were submitted and approved by the city in 2019 are not the plans that you are submitting now, correct?
No, they're physically different plans. They don't show the same detention ponds, but they do comply with the same preliminary plan.
Understood. How many lots are you losing if you have to comply with the city's present ordinance as it relates to the 50-foot stream buffer? How many lots?
We lost 15 lots because of the stream buffers, and we're going to lose an additional 3 lots because of the increased pond requirements.
So it'll be 18 lots?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you're saying you lose how much money if you lose those lots? Cost of lots, cost of construction.
Maybe
$1 million. Okay. And you base that on what?
based on that what, so a lot, lot cost is around $80,000. So, 800, it's going to be more than $1 million.
Okay.
I'm not the money guy here. I'm just the engineer.
Understood. So I'll cease those questions. I don't have any more questions for him. I don't have more questions for Mr. Paul.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Paul.
All right, subject to rebuttal. That's all we have at this time.
Okay, Mr. Rush, Starker, you've already completed your presentation case, correct?
I'm going to call, although I take the position that the question of developmental rights or developmental interests as outlined in their appeal, regardless of what they purport, regardless of the sections they purport to cite, that this decision here is to go to the city administrator. And the only thing that I feel the city, the mayor and council have to decide here is whether or not whether or not the development director should have allowed the 35-foot buffer, but whether or not the plans as submitted comply with the present regulations. And that's not a 35-foot buffer. That's the only thing that I submit that mayor and council have the authority to decide here today. The question of whether the 35 should be allowed is a developmental right, a site plan, a construction plan, a development question. And per our code, per the city of Fairburn's code, it's clear that those issues are decided by the city administrator. That being said, I want to perfect my record. We got Lester Thompson. We will not take long. And then we also have Ms. Murray, because I want to educate mayor and council on our processes so that they can understand that they were followed, regardless to whether or not they are agreed with. Lester Thompson, if you can take the stand. You've already been sworn in. Your oath continues. And I'm gonna put up exhibit 16, your plan review. And just if you could just kindly walk council through your process, your thoughts, and why you decided how you decided. And I'm gonna just exhibit 16 and tell me when I can go. Just take your time and look through it and explain your process.
You got it up?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not sharing. I can see it, but y'all can't see it. You see it now?
Yes.
Yes, sir. All right. I'll start by saying that the plan review comments provided to the applicant on January 20th, 2022 were based on guidance received from the former city attorneys, Randy Turner and Valerie Ross. On or around August 30th, 2021, I had a conference call with the former city attorneys. Our conversation concluded with them advising me that that any revision to the site development plans that were approved on April 23rd, 2019 should conform to all current rules, regulations, and standards of the city of Fairburn. Upon receiving their legal opinion, I notified Mitch Park of Land Engineering, the new project engineer, via email that it's the city's position that a plan revision of this significance would be subject to all current rules, regulations, and standards. Mr. Paul confirmed that he understood these requirements in a response email sent on August 31st, 2021. So with that being said, the comment, I guess, of question is the City of Fairburn's buffer requirements. With the understanding that I have to review the plans based on the current standards and regulations, the City of Fairburn Section 65233, Land Development Requirements, it states that an undisturbed natural vegetative buffer shall be maintained for 50 feet measured horizontally on both banks of the stream as measured from the top of the stream bank. Number two says that an additional setback shall be maintained for 25 feet measured horizontally, both undisturbed natural buffer in which all impervious cover shall be prohibited. Grading, filling, and earth moving shall be minimized within this setback.
Okay. And at all times relevant here too, did you make the decision that you thought you could make in your capacity as the city's development director?
So I did. Based on the guidance previously provided, I reviewed the plans as submitted based on the current regulations of the city of Fairbanks.
And your plan review comments are outlined in a document previously marked and stipulated into evidence as LGI Exhibit 14, dated January 20, 2022, as shown on the screen?
Yes, sir. And then the most recent one is pretty much the same one, which was dated February 4th, 2022, in which we identified some of the items that were addressed, but still outstanding items.
Okay, and that's Exhibit 16 as on the screen?
Yes, if you scroll down on that exhibit, contrary to Mr. Polk's statement, we kind of identify kind of an overview of some of the changes that were provided with this plan that shows that they're not the original plans that were submitted. It says, in addition, the revised narrative is incorrect, as the stage two sediment erosion control plan has been revised. The stage three sediment erosion control plan has been revised. The Tichuan details have been revised. The sanitary sewer plan has been revised. The sanitary profiles have been revised. A force main profile has been added to the project. The gradients have been revised. Wall plan profiles have been added. The stormwater profiles have been revised. The stormwater calculations have been added. Water plan have been updated and added to. The landscape and tree protection plan has been revised. The entrance and pond landscape plans have been revised. The erosion control details have been revised. Force main details have been added to the project. A lighting plan has been added. Sheets number 36 through 41, pump station site plan, pump station details, and pump station electrical plans have all been added and were not included in the plans approved on April 23rd, 2019.
And for what it's worth, I just want the record to reflect appellant asked for a hearing, and counsel and his client are in the same room, and it looks like they're consulting. That just doesn't make for a clean administrative process. And so I just want the record to reflect that as my client is testifying. Continue, Mr. Thompson.
And for the record also, I think Mr. Polk indicated that I met with him prior to the LDP being issued. That's not the case. I never met with Mr. Polk on site until May of 2021. When we had a pre-construction meeting on October 15, 2020, it was done telephonically through teleconference because the city was shut down due to COVID. So never met Mr. Polk until May of 2021. Please note that the approved plans were approved on October 23rd, 2019. And the LDP was issued on October 15th, 2020. I met him about seven, 8 months later on the site after a complaint was received. After an inspection by the erosion control inspector caused me to get involved with the erosion control inspections.
What did you see on the site as it relates to erosion control issues?
Various issues. You got four stream bank crossings there. They were adequately installed. That need to be brought up to first and foremost, the site was cleared of its entirety without the initial road control measures being installed. So that was the first reason for pause. So they were put on notice for that. Actually, a stop work was issued for that, so they installed the notice of installed the initial erosion control measures. They were also sediment silt and sediment was leaving the site, going downstream and causing complaints by neighbors of the property.
So are you saying they were polluting streams?
Yes, sir. Very much so.
Did you issue citations?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Have those citations been resolved?
Several citations were issued that amounted to about $10,500, and they've voluntarily paid those citations without a court appearance, which in my opinion is an admission of guilt.
Okay. And did you involve a Miss Danielle Murray in the process?
She's involved in the plan review process. She's a consultant to assist us in our plan review. So when they came back and submitted the plans for review, that's when she became involved with the project.
Okay. Is there anything else that I may have missed that you'd like to communicate to Mayor and Council and LGI about your role in this process?
Not at this time.
Okay. Thank you for your time. He's yours, Mr. Covington. If you got any questions?
Yeah, if you could turn off your screen sharing so that I could share.
Yes.
It's on you, Mr. Covington.
I'm sorry, what was that?
You were responding, was you not?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was just waiting for this exhibit to load.
Not sharing anymore, am I? Okay.
And I have to remember to actually click share screen.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Here we go. Mr. Thompson, good evening. Are you able to see Exhibit 1 there on your screen?
Yes.
Is that your signature there at the bottom of the first page?
Yes, it is.
And so you approved this plan set effective April 23rd, 2019?
That's correct.
And looking down at the second page of these plans here, it shows 35-foot stream buffers.
That's correct.
And that is in compliance with state law?
Yes, it is.
So in April of 2019, you agreed that the property could be developed with 35-foot stream buffers?
Yes.
And gave official approval to the LDP showing those 35-foot stream buffers?
Yes.
And you discussed with Mitch Polk in early October 2020 the development plans for Legend Creek?
I didn't meet with Mr. Polk until May 2021.
Right, but my question was, did you discuss them with him? I believe you said telephonically, perhaps?
We had a pre-construction meeting, yes. Well, not 2020, yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Okay.
You can go ahead and answer. I didn't hear your answer. Can you repeat it?
I had a discussion with Mr. Polk and the other participants in the pre-construction meeting on October 15th, 2020.
Thank you. And at that meeting, you discussed with him the issue of inline detention ponds?
No, I did not.
When was the first time that you discussed with Mr. Polk the inline detention issue?
May of 2021 may have been the earliest time that I discussed that with him. Is when I actually met him on site to discuss the erosion control issues that we were facing on the site.
And in that discussion, you acknowledged that there was going to have to be some changes made because of the inline detention issue?
No, I didn't suggest any changes need to be made. that came from Mr. Park. We have no issue with the plans that were approved on April 23rd, 2019. We have no issue with those plans.
So you weren't aware at all of any issue caused by the inline in-stream detention?
I was aware of it, but I didn't have an issue with it. We were in a previous legal opinion by former city attorneys, we were told that we had to approve the plans based on the initial plat.
And that's the opinion from Randy Turner that we discussed earlier?
Randy Turner and Valerie Ross, yes.
Mr. Covington, I'm sorry, sir, to interject. I need to ask a procedural to Ms. Noel. Because of the fact that you have an advertised public hearing meeting that's scheduled at 7 o'clock, what is your recommendation as it relates to the continuance of this meeting and or how would you suggest we proceed?
Mr. Mayor, I would recommend that we continue the hearing to a date certain because we have a regularly scheduled city council meeting. And pursuant to the Open Meetings Act, that meeting must occur as scheduled with some exceptions. This hearing does not fall within those exceptions.
Okay, and so my question would be, in this case, do we need to ask for a recommendation from the both the appellant and, in this case, Mr. Sturr, the city representative?
Yeah, that would be my recommendation, sir.
You know, I would suggest in the procedural rules that are applicable here today gave each side an hour and a half. And I would submit that LGI has taken its full hour and a half. But notwithstanding that, you know, I think there's, in light of the position I've taken, and I think Mr. Covington alluded to this earlier, we could probably resolve the balance of this on briefs, unless Mr. Covington objects to the same. But I submit that in terms of, you know, I don't know if Madam Counselor for Mayor and Council is going to limit LGI's argument time, but I say that to say that they've had their hour and a half. So I'm open to, you know, I want to give them due process. So yep. Whatever, you know, I'm open to whatever.
And Mr. Covington, as I was actually clocking your time frame between the time you started and the time you actually yield, it was just over an hour and a half. My question to you, though, in efforts to do fair process, are you acceptable to the terms of what Mr. Worry recommended, or would you do you object?
Well, I just have a couple more questions for Mr. Thompson, and then my cross exam with him would be through. So, really, the only other all I have left to do would be any cross exam of Mr. Stark's other witness, and then closing.
I'll submit, and I don't know, it's 6:51. I don't know if we're going to have time for closings, but I'll submit my other witnesses' testimony via affidavit. I accept it without objection, your affidavit. I'll submit her testimony on affidavit so we can move it forward if that's acceptable to you, Mr. Covington.
Mr. Covington, is that it?
Just with the stipulation that if there's anything in the affidavit that we need to rebut, that we'd be allowed to provide a rebuttal affidavit of our own to that.
Not a problem. So, agreed.
Okay, so Ms. Noel, with that understood, is it understood, just so we council will have a point of clarification, at this point, all communication in this case is be a written documentation back and forth between the two attorneys. Is that an accurate
depiction? That's correct. Testimony will be submitted by affidavit. If there are any objections to the testimony that's submitted, that will be submitted by affidavit as well.
And so in my efforts to do a proper closing of the hearing, what would be the proper motion, being that we're at a different junction than we thought we'd be? Do I just simply make a motion in this case that the announcement that the public hearing has concluded because it ended took a little longer than we thought it would?
The motion should be to adjourn the hearing subject to submission of affidavits by appellant and the city.
In this case, can I get a motion to adjourn the hearing subject to written?
Can we get a briefing deadline?
And that was going to be my next point. The next point is the briefing deadline. The decision should be made within 7 days of conclusion of the hearing. So the briefing deadline should be, I would recommend, no later than Friday. Mr. Covington, is that sufficient for you?
Well, I have a couple of points. First of all, before we actually have a motion and close this out, I had just, as I mentioned, just more than two other cross-examined questions for Mr. Thompson while he's here. Secondly, to address your question you just asked, I would need to see the affidavit from the city's other witness first before we get to any kind of written submission of closing that we're talking about here. So I don't know what the time frame for getting that affidavit in the record would be.
And I may very well not even submit an affidavit. So, and so in that event, there's no counter affidavit to be submitted.
Okay. So at this point, Ms. Noel, in this case, Mr. Covington has asked that a witness, he has further questioning. My question would be, is there a time frame that those questions should be submitted to counsel?
No, he wants to examine Thompson now.
Right.
Okay, so in this case, I've got literally 5 minutes before a public meeting is supposed to commence. I don't think you're going to be able to do that examination in 4 minutes. In this case,
the time will not allow at this point.
That time is not going to allow you to do a further examination, sir. So, Ms. Noel, in my efforts to be completely transparent and fair to Mr. Covington, what would be your recommendation as relates to a witness that he wished to examine?
I'll ask Mr. Starkey, are you amenable to making Mr. Thompson available for questioning at a later date, a date certain?
Via deposition is what you mean?
Yes.
Yes, and limited to this is within the scope of examination, and so limited. And I need Mr. Covington to commit to a time frame. He said he only had a couple of questions. So what are we talking? 15 minutes, 30 minutes? What are we talking about, Mr. Covington?
Certainly less than 30 minutes. Probably less than 15.
Okay, I do. I so agree.
Okay, so it's understood that it will be less than 15 minutes for a questioning of Mr. Lester Thompson by Mr. Covington. At this point, I'd like to entertain a meeting.
And I'm sorry, before we do that, and if I decide I'm going to call Ms. Murray, we will make her available for deposition for my direct and his examination as well. Okay. If I decide, I don't know that I will.
At the same time.
At the same time. Absolutely. Okay.
Mr. Covington,
we have a date certain?
He indicated by Friday. That's April the 1st. My question is, is that acceptable to you, Mr. Covington?
Well, we got Mr. Lester Thompson on the line, and we got Miss Murray, so we can get their availability. My eldest child is getting married on Friday, so I can't do anything on Friday.
Okay. Can we get a date certain next Monday? Is next Monday too late?
Monday is good enough for me.
That's the first, second, third, fourth, I believe.
And we just
is that, Mr. Covington, is that acceptable for you?
Next Monday, I will be out of town.
Okay. When do you leave town?
On Saturday.
You're leaving Saturday. So we in this case, we're talking about we need to have this done by Thursday. Is Mr. Lester Thompson and Miss the other one, are you available tomorrow?
I'm available.
Okay. Mr. Covington, are you able to cross-examine tomorrow? Is that enough time for you to prepare?
I could do Wednesday.
Okay, let's make it Wednesday. That's the 20th. That's the 30th. Okay, all parties in agreement with Wednesday, the time for you to examine Mr. Lester Thompson. And then my question would be, you would need the next day, that Thursday, to have all the written submissions. Is that adequate for both parties?
Yeah, that's adequate for my side.
Mr. Thompson.
And can we agree that we will start at I know Mr. Thompson starts early and so do I. So can we start at 9 a.m., Mr. Covington? I want to say 8, but everybody don't like to start at 8. But at least we need to start at 9.
Yeah, tentatively that looks okay.
Okay, so we're talking about April the 30th at 9 p.m. And then
March.
9 a.m. And then we will have those brief written that very next day, which is that Thursday, which is the last day of the month. Is that, we're all in agreement?
Agreed.
Okay. Mr. Covington, I need for the record you to say you're in agreement.
I could do the first.
Okay. He can't, Mr. Rory is not available the first.
He's talking about the briefs.
Okay, you can submit the brief by the first. Okay, that'll work.
That's okay on this side.
And that's fine with you, Mr. Stewart?
Yeah, that's fine with me. Yeah.
Okay. With that being said, I'd like to entertain a motion to adjourn the hearing subject to the written, subject to the both the briefing as it relates to the interviewing of Mr. Lester Thompson on Wednesday, as well as the written briefs that will be submitted by the first of April. Is there a motion?
Councilman Collins, so moved.
Is there a second?
Second. Mayor Pro Tem Portis Jones.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? That motion carries. It is exactly 7 o'clock, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't mind, because the council has been sitting through a 2-hour meeting. I'm going to ask